So in this text, we have studied that there are four kinds of pursuits that a man undertakes: acquisition of wealth or possessions, sense enjoyments, pleasure. And then we studied that these two of them should be tempered with righteousness. What I earn and what I enjoy should be right, should not be immoral, should not be unethical. And then the fourth pursuit that man has is liberation, where he or she wants to be liberated from this cycle of birth and death and free from all sorrows. But this author says that love for God or bhakti or devotion is even higher than liberation. A true devotee of God who loves God, he says, I do not mind even being born again and again, even 1,000 times. As long as I remember you, Lord, as long as I love you, don't leave my heart. He tells God, he says, I may forget you, but you don't forget me. You always stay with me and keep reminding me of your presence. So that is called true love. And love for God is highest. It's not limited. Love for an individual or love for an object limits us. But love for God is limitless because he is infinite. He is limitless. So supreme love is love for the entire creation. And that's what we had studied last time. And last week we also talked about ego. I think I spent some time talking about ego, where what exactly is ego and how it interferes in our spiritual journey, we had discussed in detail most of my talk. Tony did prepare some CDs on ego. I think it is a useful subject if anybody is interested in buying them. They are available. Thank you, Tony. So today we shall continue our studies, because we said supreme love or devotion is love for God. But who is God, or what is God, or where is God? How we say God is everywhere, but I don't see him anywhere. So if I don't see God anywhere, and if we say he's everywhere, what exactly is he? Let us study that today. I think that's an important subject. Before we talk about loving God, we have to know what God is or who he is. So in the verse number 8, it says on page 14, Ishvara Sarva Bhutatma, Ishvara Sarva Bhutatma, Sarvadharopi Vaitataha, Kalyane Sarva Bhutanam, Ratir Bhaktir Matottama. So bhakti mata uttama, it is believed uttama bhakti, the highest devotion is what? First we say, what is God? So he says Ishvara, God is sarva bhutatma, is the self of all. He is the self of all. Sarva dhara, and he is the support. He is the substratum of everybody, everything. So one who knows that he or she or it, the Lord, that is the support of all, that is the self of all, then what does such a person do? Kalyane sarva bhutatma, sarva bhutanam. Then he or she works for the welfare of all beings, and rati, and totally the person is involved in serving and helping others. That is the highest devotion, that is highest love. So let us see what God is and what God is not. See, we have all different ideas about what is God. And this is very prevalent. It's not something I made up. Some people think, you know, he's an emperor, you know, sitting somewhere above the seventh heaven in this beautiful palace and eating pizza and sipping champagne. And then he's watching over us, you know, and we are down here suffering, and we are all miserable, and he's a little tyrant. He doesn't care what happens. to all these miserable creatures. As long as I have my, caviar and I have my champagne. So he's sitting up there eating ice cream and then watching through his window and watching all these miserable beings suffer. Let them suffer, So some people believe that God is like that. He's a, he's all powerful. He's an emperor, but I am a miserable creature. I am suffering. And he has no interest in our suffering. He doesn't care. If he's suffering, let him suffer. That's his karma. He has nothing to do with it. That is one belief. Other people say, this is a very famous saying, especially in India, I don't know about here. Man proposes, God disposes. Which is like, we keep on proposing and he says, what's your proposal? Dispose it. Dispose. He just waits, let anybody. He doesn't. Is that what he really is? Or some people think, he's like a judge or a magistrate sitting in the court and watching, okay, bring his file. What are his karmas? Hell, throw him in hell. Hell, And most of the time, loves to throw people in hell. Very few people, saints or few here and there, okay, you can. He's very miserly. Most of them, he doesn't care. Or some people believe he's neutral. He does nothing. He's just sitting there. He has nothing to do with the world. Maybe he created it, maybe. But after that, he's not involved in what I'm doing. He's just sitting there neutral, like a impotent or incapable. He's just sitting there. He doesn't do nothing. I am responsible for my own actions. I am responsible. So they think of him as being a useless person, just sitting there somewhere up there doing nothing. Other people think God is my servant. Okay? God, give me this, give me that, bring me this, bring me that. As long as he's bringing, okay, you are good. And the one day he doesn't, then instead of God disposing me, I dispose him. From tomorrow, God, I'm not coming to your temple. I'm not going to talk to you. Why? Because I didn't get what I wanted. My son didn't pass or my, whatever I wanted, I didn't get. So you are useless. And I go to some other form of God. I get tired of Hinduism, so I go to Christianity. Or if I get tired of Shiva, I pick up Krishna. Why? This God is no good. I need to find somebody else who will give me what I want. So we think of God as a wish fulfiller. Like in Hinduism, there's a tree called a Parijata, tree, which gives everything, anything you want. Wish fulfilling tree. So we think God is something like that. He's just supposed to give me what I want. But is he really that? Is that really? And a lot of people actually believe it, and that is all their relationship with God is one of these three, or all of these five or six. Then other people argue whether he has a form or formless, and there's tremendous arguments. There's big schools of thought, and they'll spend hours arguing and months and years and writing books and fighting and there are schools and there are proofs and philosophy. And some people say, he can only be form. How can he be formless? Formless means what? Where is he? But a form, Jesus or Krishna or Shiva or Ganpati. Yeah, that I can see. I can touch. It's like our children. You can see them and touch them. Okay, so God is also like one of them. But then those who believe in form, then they argue about which form is superior. Whether Jesus is superior or Buddha is superior. In Hinduism, they have so many wars. There were the Shaivites who believed that Shiva was superior and Vaishnavites. And there would be wars and killing. And same thing, Protestant and Catholic and all. Why? Because they fight about the form or which particular church or which particular building or which particular sect or which particular book or which particular philosophy. So we have all these fights about God. And then others people believe he's formless. He's all pervading. He's everywhere. Everything is him. So, if everything is him, then why can't I see him? If he's here everywhere, why can't I touch him? Why can't I see him? Why can't I talk to him? Why can't I hear him? So these are all the arguments about for and against God. One of the very nice descriptions about God I had heard is that God, G, OD, he is generator, organizer, and destroyer, which means that he creates us, generates. He creates us, he creates this whole universe, this earth, the planets, the star, the moon. Then he organizes, he supports. So he makes sure that we have enough to sustain us, make sure the air is clean, and make sure there are plants that remove the carbon dioxide and create oxygen, make sure the sun rises every morning to nourish us, make sure the rain comes. So he organizes, he takes care of us, and then when it is time to go, because there is a constant cycle of birth and death, new people are born, so the old have to leave. So he is the generator, the organizer, and the destroyer. But in this verse, he is said to be the self of all and the support or the substratum. What do we mean by the self of all? Self means that which allows us to function, allows us to work. There is a very beautiful verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hriddesher Junatishthati Brahmayan Sarva Bhutani Yantra Rudhani Mayaya. He says, O Lord, the teacher tells the student Arjuna, the Lord is in the heart of all beings. Sarva Bhutanam Hriddeshe, in the heart region called the heart, he stays. And what does he? Brahmayan Sarva Bhutani Yantra Rudhani Mayaya. He says, just as a motor creates activity, just as a motor moves the fan, or the motor moves the car, or, you know, so similarly, he is the motor. This is written 8,000 years ago, when even before technology was. This particular verse is there, that it is the energy that moves all of us. How? Through the power of his Maya. So the self is the knowing principle and is the moving principle that causes this body to know, the mind to feel, and the intellect to think. So whatever I know, whatever I think, whatever I do, it is because of the presence of the self, which is the consciousness, the life principle within us. So that is called the self of all, the life. It is also the substratum. It is the support. It is the that without which a thing will not be a thing. That which is the essential nature of a thing. It's like there is a bangle, and then it asks the guru, the necklace guru, "Oh guru, can you tell me what is gold? Have you seen gold?" A bangle asking the necklace, "Have you seen gold? Can you show me gold?" What is gold? Gold is the substratum of the bangle. It is the substratum of the necklace. Whatever is in gold is nothing. Whatever is in the bangle is nothing but gold. Whatever is in the necklace is nothing but gold. So whatever you see in the universe is nothing but that divine presence. That alone is there in all. It just has different names and forms, just as bangle and necklace and earring and toe ring and nose ring. The names are different, the form is different, the shape is different, the usage is different. But they are all nothing but gold. So similarly, Lord is there in every one of us. Our names are different, the forms are different, the shape is different, the animal is different from the bird, bird is different from the plant. The usage is different, the function is different, but all of us are nothing but that one consciousness. It is like saying the ocean. Ocean is the God of all the waves. Ocean is not sitting far away somewhere in the above the heaven and the waves are playing. No, the ocean supports all the waves, plays through all the waves. Waves are nothing but a disturbance in the depth of the ocean. So similarly, God is the depth. It is the silence. That's why in meditation we go deep into the silence, because that is where when your mind becomes quiet, you feel the inner depth. And the thoughts that are on the surface in our mind are like the waves on the ocean. Just as the waves are a disturbance in that ocean, so thoughts are nothing but a disturbance in that consciousness. And that is how one has to recognize that in meditation, I see the thoughts as a disturbance, but I am not caught in the thoughts. I am not playing in the thoughts, but I am going deep, just as a diver, when he wants to find pearls, he does not swim on the surface of the ocean. He dives deep, where he can find pearls and all the precious jewels and all that. So similarly, to find the precious jewel of the self, the Lord within, one has to go deep and avoid the disturbance of the thoughts. The thoughts are at the surface. I do not need to let the thoughts disturb me. I have to go deeper. So that is called the self of all beings, and it is called the support or the substratum. There is a very beautiful story which I had heard a long time ago. It really explains what God is. So there was this king, and he had a very wise council of ministers. His prime minister was the wisest. And he had challenged that if anybody comes from anywhere, and if he can ask a question that I cannot answer, I will give him, 1,000 gold coins, and he will become superior, and I will accept his, and I'll be ashamed and insulted and all. And so many scholars came, and they asked all kinds of questions, and the king or his council of ministers could answer. And so they left. They never got this. But one day, one man comes, and he says, I'm going to ask you 3 questions. I do not want any vague answers. I want clear, substantial answers with examples. If you can't do that, then I will be victorious and you will be defeated. So he said, okay, what are the questions? He says, 3 questions. What does God do? Where is God? And what is his power? And I want this answered by tomorrow morning. And the king was stunned. What does God do? Where is God? And what is his power? And he wants by substantial answers, not just, wishy-washy answers. He wants clear proof. So, and I have to give it by tomorrow. He was so worried, And so he called his prime minister in the evening, and he said, look, I need the answer by tomorrow. And if you don't bring me the answer, I am going to be insulted, which means your head is off. That's what kings used to do. So now the prime minister has to find this answer by tomorrow, because he was the wisest one, and he was pacing his room and thinking, how can I answer these 3 questions? What does God do? Where is God? And what is his power? And his cook, sees him worried. He says, sir, what is the matter? He says, you won't know. He says, no, sir, please tell me. He says, I have these 3 questions I need to answer. And the cook's teenage daughter, 10, 12 years old, she was running around. So she started listening, to these 3 questions. She says, I know the answers. What? You know the answers? Yes, yes. What are you going? Don't worry, I can tell them. I don't worry about it. He said, no. He said, I'm telling you, I can answer it. He said, but what you have to do is go and tell them that this question is so simple that my cook's daughter is going to answer. Even I don't need to answer. Just tell them that, tells the prime minister. Such a simple question. So they said, are you sure it's going to be my head tomorrow? She said, no, don't worry. So in the morning, the king is sitting on the throne, and the guy who had asked the question is sitting next to the king. And so this prime minister walks with the cook and with the cook's daughter. So king says, do you have an answer? Prime minister says, yes. Such a simple question. My cook's daughter can even answer. What about me? So he said, really? Okay, call her up. So she comes. So she tells the king and that other guy. She says, look, you are asking the question and I am answering. She said, yeah. She said, okay, then you get down from the throne. I have to sit up and you have to sit down, because one who asks the question is inferior. One who answers, the guru, is superior. So she sits on the throne, and the king and that guy who had asked the question are made to sit on the seat below. Then she says, okay, bring a cow. So they go bring the cow from the cow shed, feed the cow grass. So the cow eats the grass. They say, milk the cow. So they milk the cow, and out comes milk. So she says, what you asked, what does God do? Look, the cow is brown and she's eating green grass. But what is the color of the milk? White. So a brown cow eating green grass can produce white milk, Not only that, but all the cows all over the world, whatever their color is, whatever they eat, whatever the grains, they all produce white milk. Isn't that a miracle? That's what God does. Okay, now where does God live? So she said, where is God and where is the milk in this cow? He said, well, the milk you get from the udder. Yeah, the udder you only get a little bit of milk. But gallons of milk come out from the cow. Where is the milk in the cow? He said, the milk is everywhere. Everywhere in the cow. But when you squeeze the udder, the milk comes out. He said, yeah, that's what God is. God is everywhere. But when you want to find him, when you want to approach him, you go to the temple or church or mosque or go to a spiritual place like that, and you can find God. Okay, this is very good. What does God do? Where is God? He already showed us with example. Okay, what is God's power? He says, what is God's power? Look, King, you were up on the throne and I was a humble cook's daughter. Look, what has it become today? I am sitting on the throne and you are sitting in front of me as a humble supplicant. So that's what God can do. King, don't become too powerful. Any day he can put you down and he can bring anybody else up. So this, the king and that other man said, wow, these are beautiful answers. So that man left and the king was so happy because his prestige was saved. So he gave $1,000 to this lay girl and he gives $1,000 to the minister. So that's what this story tells us, that God can do anything. All the miracles, we think these things for granted, but how miraculous things are happening constantly. You know, we eat all kinds of junk, and how does the food get digested? The proteins and the carbohydrates and the fats and how they get metabolized and go to the liver and wherever it is required, make muscle, make bones, make blood vessels. Everything happens because of that Almighty. So that's how one can see him everywhere, see his power, see his action, see his activity. I like this beautiful saying, Swami Chinmayananda, who is the founder of our mission, he said, the infinite cannot be gained by the finite. That means God is infinite and I am finite. So I cannot know God. I cannot describe him. I cannot reach him. I cannot know him. So then said, well, why are we sitting here then? Why are you talking and why are we all listening and why are we talking about God when God cannot be gained by the finite? That is a very powerful saying. What it means is that at this moment, our thinking is very limited. I think of myself as this limited individual ego, which we talked about last week. And as long as I limit myself to be this limited individual being, I can never become that. I can never know that. I can never reach that. To know God, you have to become God. You have to become infinite. Become God does not mean that you can create the universe. What it means is that you give up this limited ego, this body, mind, and intellect, and focus on the divinity within and say, I am that divinity. The moment you say, I am that divinity, I am not this ego, then you become one with that. And so the way to reach the infinite is to become infinite. Give up your finitude, give up this body identification, because this body I have to drop anyway one day. So why be attached to this body? But I am infinite, I am eternal, I am permanent, I never die, I was never born. I am birthless, deathless, immortal. That is my true nature. Once you know that, then you have gained the infinite, you have become infinite. That's what the saints did. That's why Jesus could say, he who has seen me has seen the Father in heaven and I are one. And that is the understanding of the wise person. So what is attitude of such an individual? Once he realizes that the self in me is the self of all, that God in me is God everywhere, and that everything is that one alone, then he develops universal love for all. Just as I pervade my whole body, my head, my neck, my arms, my legs, everywhere I am, And I love all parts of me equally. I don't say I love my little toe less and I love my finger more. I love them all. They're all me. So similarly, a wise person sees himself in all beings, that they are all me because they are all that one infinite, my beloved Father, my beloved Krishna, they're everybody is that one. So he develops total love for all, total spontaneous love and spontaneous service, serving all as myself. You know, just as I own a car, how much I love my car, the moment I hear some, you know, noise, I get worried, you know, what happened. Or if somebody scratches my car, I get all worried, I'm so sad, you know, my beautiful car, and now there is this scratch. So similarly, just as I love my car, that's how I should love everybody. That if nobody should get scratched, nobody should get hurt, everybody should be loved, everybody should be taken care of, everybody I should. So that is called love for God. Love for God is love for all. And sin is when I hurt somebody or when I harm somebody or when I do something that takes me away from my divine nature is sin. Swami Chinmayananda used to say, sin is not in the action, it is in the reaction. So the actions I do are not sinful or meritorious. It is the reaction that it leaves, the residue that is left in my mind after the action that determines whether it's a sin or not. Like I have talked here before, somebody cuts up another person's stomach with a knife. If he is doing it to rob or murder him, that's a sin. But if a surgeon is cutting somebody's stomach to take out a tumor, that same action becomes meritorious. So it is the reaction. The action itself is not sinful, but it is the reaction that is left. So actions that take me towards my divinity and make me more peaceful are called meritorious actions, and actions that take me away from my divinity and bring me down from humans to the animal or the lower, you know, status is called sin. This reminds me of a little story. There was this priest, young priest, who joined a parish. And so the old priest said, you know, you have to listen to confession. So when the people come, I want you to listen to confession. First couple of days, I'm going to watch and see how you listen and see. So the young priest is listening to confession and the old priest is watching him. So after 2 days, he says, you know, you're not doing it correctly. He says, what do you mean not doing it correctly? He says, when somebody says they have sinned, you have to cross your arms and say, okay, yes. How did it make you feel when you sinned? You shouldn't say, oh, wow. What happened next? So this is what we studied today, that God is the self of all. He is the life within, and he is the support, the substratum. He is the substance of all of us. We are nothing but that one divinity. And the way to reach him is to get out of your limited ego and realize your infinite nature. And see everybody as me. That once you understand that everybody is me, everybody is that divinity, then only you can be called a man of God. Then only you can say, you cannot say, I love God and I hate so-and-so. You can't. Once you love God, you have to love everybody, even the terrorist, even the murderer, even the criminal. It does not mean that you allow them to do whatever. You may, if they need to be punished, if you're a judge or you're a policeman and you have to punish them, you do that. But without the internal hatred or the internal anger, but with an attitude of love. So this is, I tried to answer the question, what is God? Any questions or comments? Yeah, it would depend on the reaction, depend on the what residue it leaves within you. Like an executioner, you know, when somebody is condemned to die and has committed all kind of horrible crimes and somebody is appointed to inject the medicine and kill him, he's murdering, but he's doing his job. is doing a duty. So it depends on the reaction. It's not, no action is sinful or sinless. It is what it, the residue it leaves in your mind, whether it makes you feel good or bad or indifferent. But yeah, I mean, the scriptures do tell us, you know, what is right and what is wrong. So yeah, generally following the scriptures is meritorious, and not following the scriptures is sinful, yes. But ultimately it is inner reaction, inner response to your action that will decide. It's a very subjective experience, sin. Yes, intent is. Absolutely, yeah. The intent, the motive, all that. Yeah. So it is subjective. It's not objective.
But it's still sinful.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. They, but inside, even at this bottom, they may also know it. Mm-hmm. You know, that what I'm doing is wrong. That's why they'll try to hide, or they'll try to. But. Yeah, but those are the examples, rare examples. But generally, you know, sin is what it. But and then, like I said, also the scriptures. Let the scriptures be your guide. That is the second thing. So together, the scriptures and your inner feeling, voice, both.
Those people, like, more giving into
their aspects. Yeah, yeah. No, those are obviously, you know, harmful, because even a child molester, he's going to hide and do it. He knows what he's doing is wrong. You know, he's doing it because he's compelled to do it, or he has this inner strong. You know, maybe he was molested himself as a child. A lot of child molesters were themselves molested. And so he's, but he knows it is wrong because he went through the suffering himself.
We're sinners, for the Christian belief. That's a different.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, that is, I think what we believe is that we are born because of our vastness. So what is sin? Sin is that anything that takes me away from my divine nature is a sin, anything that brings me down. But essentially what we say, that we are all essentially divine. We are not sinners. We are essentially divine but have fallen from our. So what they say is that we are sinners but have to rise to God. You know, what we say is that we are divine but have fallen. But the end result is the same. But I think there it starts with a negative connotation that I am somehow bad, I am useless. But if you say you are a divine being, you are a child of God, and you just have fallen, and all you have to do is recognize and go back, I think that's a more positive way of looking at life, looking at oneself as a positive rather than a negative.
Eliminates the excuse,
eliminates the guilt. But the motive or the attitude or the intent is very important in any action. You know, with which motive you're, like she said, I think that's a very important point. Any other questions, comments?
So, what about the executioner who's going to kill the rapist, right? You know, they inject them. And I've seen there's a lot of people who don't like the rapist. Is he sinning by thinking, I still didn't like him?
You mean because he's doing it as a job?
But at the same time, he didn't like him, the rapist.
Yeah, I think truly, if he's truly doing his job, then there should be no likes and dislikes. He knows that whoever has been judged by society, and if he brings his personal likes and dislikes, then it's not right. The best is to do your duty as a service to society, as a service to God. It's a very difficult job, you know, to inject and kill somebody. But I have been given the job, oh God, I just do it as your service, as a service to society. Nobody else wanted the job, I took it. So that should be the true attitude of whatever you're doing, whether you are a clerk, or whether you are a doctor, whether you are a housewife, whether you're a businessman. Every action should be done as a servant of God rather than with likes and dislikes. I like this job, I don't like. The moment you develop likes and dislikes, then your job becomes problems too.
You think it's important for him to say, well, I just executed him, so forgive me?
Yeah, he can say that, sure. He can ask for God's forgiveness. But if his motive is pure, if he has no personal agenda, then, you know, then there is no sin in that.
Wow.
There is no sin. because he says, you know, God, nobody else wanted the job, I took it. And he just does it honestly, sincerely, without getting his personal feelings. But yeah, he can ask for forgiveness if he feels guilty about it, but at the highest level, somebody had to do it anyway. You know, if once a person is condemned to death, somebody had to kill, so it happened to be me. Yeah. But yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult to do something like that. I can understand. Or even doctors who inject, you know, prepare all this for execution, because our first Hippocratic oath is to save life, and then when you are asked to kill somebody, it's not easy.